Even though the event that I came to was finished yesterday, I spent all day pretty much in meetings. I went back to OECD for some individual meetings with some folks who work there. I think that we had a big win that I can't really talk about yet, but undoubtedly, if you follow my professional work, especially on the measurementlab.net site and on the Google Public Policy blog, both in the US and the EU, you should see something in the next handful of months about a well, I'll give you a hint about a publication where potentially some of our data may make an appearance. Very cool. We're going to obviously have to work very hard in the coming months to make that happen, and very exciting in terms of the exposure that the work that we're doing is going to get. After that, we retire to the Google office near the Opera Theater, another a particularly gorgeous spot in Paris. And one of the landmarks so far, one of the few landmarks so far that I've actually seen by the light of the day. It's definitely awe-inspiring when you come upon the plots in front of the opera to see the gilt figures and all of the Baroque reliefs on the front and the colonnade and all that just lit up with the sunshine. We got a sun break, which so far this week, as I was talking about yesterday, is pretty rare. That coincided with our entrance into the square. So that was a particularly breathtaking moment before ducking back into an office for another couple of meetings through the afternoon. And I have to say, the French Googleplex, or maybe it's the Parisian, I don't know if they have other campuses in France, but the Googleplex in Paris is quite impressive, as you would expect, that the local furnishings and decor have been tailored, or they've made use of an existing space that's already very typical of the city. Quite lovely. I had a very nice lunch there. Excellent food, as with everywhere else in Paris, and a very productive remainder of the day. Hopping on the metro on the 8 line to the Bastille, a few more things that I noticed that are different about the transit system here than the ones in the States. Even though the gauge of the rail and the size of the car reminds me very much of the Muni, the municipal rail line in San Francisco, there's something about the rail cars here that I haven't seen anywhere else, that you actually have to press a button to open the door, whether you wish to board a train or to exit a train. And that catches me by surprise, since it's so far in my experience, my personal experience is unique, and I'll often stand there a bit waiting for the door to open, wondering why it's not for a split second before I think to pull the latch, because some of the older cars have sort of a rotating latch and some of them have a push button. Another thing that I noticed, I was talking about the etiquette of people standing up and giving up their folding seats to make a little bit more standing room when the cars are full. I actually saw a sticker on one of the newer cars on a different line that I've been riding most of the week that actually advises that people should do this. There's an infographic. I wasn't able to read the English translation. I only was someone's head was blocking it. I only saw the French, and another language that I don't read, since I really don't have any other spoken languages other than English. But it was very clear from the infographic, the big red X over the figure, the stick figure sitting in a chair, meant to advise people that they really should be polite and make room for more when the crush of the crowd gets greater. One last thing I'll mention about the Paris Metro that might be worth mentioning. Again, it's unique in my experience, which is fairly limited as I'm not terrifically well traveled even in the US. I've been to New York, I've been to San Francisco, Seattle very briefly, and not many other cities besides. A few more on the East Coast, but nothing where I stayed long enough or was doing enough kind of business work to explore the mass transit systems to get around on a regular basis. But I don't believe I've seen, maybe in San Francisco, and I wasn't just looking, this is true, but I don't believe I've seen anywhere else other than in Paris, the fact that the windows on the metro cars can actually be opened. And I was kind of wondering about that. We had a slightly warmer term, probably related to that sun break that I was talking about midday. And so a few of the windows were open as I rode to the Bastille for dinner and then rode back. Speaking of dinner, I had a very nice one at Place de Vosges, or Vosges. I think it's a soft J, not a hard G, My dad was telling me when he was advising me about making dinner reservations, which I finally succeeded to do for tomorrow night at Les Sauvages. That's probably going to be the large part of my update tomorrow. My travelogue is eating at La Sauvage, one of the restaurants founded by one of the younger proteges of Robuchon, a grand master chef here in France. The point in bringing that up was the advice on I guess the letter G being more typically a J sound in French, so Gideon instead of Gideon. So regardless, this is the square where the mention of Victor Hugo is located, and I think this is another data point backing up the theory that I shared last time that if you go to some place that's a little more of a tourist draw. Like this square clearly was. Lots of shopping, lots of beautiful architecture around the square, a beautiful covered walkway going all the way around the square. So, with the on again, off again rain and overall damp weather we've been having this week, it was a nice break actually to be able to walk around and not have to worry about getting my umbrella out or putting the hood on my jacket up. But it being a place where, understandably, more tourists come to the wait staff, the waiter serving the outside tables in particular, William, very nice fellow, was a lot more receptive and was a lot more polite to me as a non-French speaker. And again, I don't have enough data points to compare on the other side, but I do think there is something to what I was talking about, that depending on where in the city you go to, you may actually not run into that stereotype of the very rude French waiters. And this is despite the fact that my dad's characterization of a lot of the brasseries, which Ma Bourgogne is a brasserie. It was on his list of recommendations, and I having eaten there, I totally understand why. And he characterized these brasseries as having the typical rude French waiter, but this was in a larger sort of picture that he painted of them being more lively and more bustling, and that actually I think matches with why my concierge was recommending several brasseries last night. That if I'm out on my own, it's more I guess of a bar-like and a social scene rather than a staid restaurant, and I have to agree, it definitely was more companionable. I meant to bring out a novel with me last time because one of my work colleagues was talking about how she likes to go out and eat alone, but she typically likes to bring a book, and then she'll have a quiet read as she eats a leisurely dinner. And I meant to do that last night to give that a try, and actually, considering how chatty the hostess was, I don't regret that I left my novel here in the hotel room. But this time out, I didn't want to be left kind of sitting there staring at the table, staring at scenery I couldn't see because it was well after dark, and I think I was well served. And there's another thing that I've noticed. I noticed this in particular at Devez last night, and definitely at Ma Bourgogne's tonight, that there's a very different pace. And it's not just what's been pointed out to me that the Parisians eat dinner later in the evening. They eat after 7 o'clock, typically around 8. But they eat at a very slow pace, and I think that, coupled with the small portion sizes that I was talking about, just leads to a very different approach to food. And I tried to observe that again in trying to understand the local experience. Tried to take my time. I talked about giving up on the beer quest here in Paris, although ironically enough, on the walk back, I finally did find a likely spot with some recognizable and worthwhile imports to try. I don't know if I'll make it back there, but instead, on advice of an old college acquaintance, Jeremy, I ordered a couple of glasses of the Beaujolais Nouveau, as it's apparently a good time of year to get that. And I have to say that was very tasty, and it was quite nice to sit there with a book under the outdoor heaters, sipping a nice Beaujolais Nouveau. And then after I finished my second glass, having a nice espresso, as I like to do, and espresso in Paris is, I think it's worthwhile. Again, one of my work colleagues complains bitterly about how bad the coffee is here, and I don't I don't find that to be the case. And my best friend says that the French press here, he's a huge fan of French press, is worth seeking out. I'm not as much a fan of the French press. I do tend to lean more towards espresso and the variations thereupon. But in my experience here, even though a lot of the espresso is just with like a Lavazza machine, something like that, it's pretty decent. And I think maybe it's because it is this very recognizable brand that you'll see here in Europe, that the machines just turn out a very consistent quality of coffee. Regardless, that was a very pleasant way to wind up the meal and to sit there for a moment. And I actually did get in a bit of people watching for a Wednesday night in a bustling urban setting where you might not expect people to be out and about, either tourists or natives. There was, I won't say a lot of foot traffic, but a fair amount of foot traffic. So I got to see quite a few people come by and check out the menu. And it didn't feel quite so odd. It felt a little more comfortable. And I think part of that might have been that I did actually go ahead and indulge in the outdoor seating. In this instance, it was under the stone arched walkways that I was talking about, so there was no concern about the rain. There was just a concern about it being a bit cooler, and I found that the outdoor heaters worked so well. I was most comfortable taking my heavy overcoat off and just sitting there and really, really quite enjoyed it. One of the things that I have noticed about espresso in the evenings is that unlike other places where I've had espresso, more Italian inspired places, and I have yet to go to Italy, although it's entirely possible that I might have cause to go there in the coming years for work, because we're talking about some collaborations with Italian technologists, so who knows. But in the States, where you get espresso served in a very traditional style, you might get it with a sugar cube, you might get it with a lemon rind, a twist of lemon rind. And I've seen it with a sugar cube or a sugar packet. But in Paris, what they also apparently often do is serve it with a chocolate. And the chocolates are quite excellent. Both times I got it with chocolate, the chocolate was very light, very delicate. It was a good quality dark chocolate that just almost literally melted in your mouth the moment you bit into it. And I noticed the chocolate, tonight I was paying a little more, much closer attention, actually was from the same company that makes a lot of these coffee machines that you'll see all over the city. I saw them in Budapest. I think I saw them as well in Brussels, so I think it's a fairly recognizable European brand targeted at kind of restaurateurs and cafes. The fact that the chocolate was from the maker of the machinery wasn't really the most unusual thing about it. I was looking at the particulars on the back to pay a little bit more attention. I hadn't with the other chocolate that I had with coffee. I think it was Monday night at the Italian place we went to. They served it with a square of chocolate. But it was a 70% cocoa chocolate. So yeah, I guess it's that would make it technically a darker chocolate, pretty dark. But also, what I thought was interesting, and I thought I noticed something when I bit into it, is that it was flavored with ginger flavor. Not ginger, it's a ginger flavor, which usually means, at least in the States, that means there's no actual ginger in it, and I have to imagine that it being that particular of saying ginger flavor, that it has that same exact distinction here as well. And it was quite nice. I don't think I've ever had that combination of ginger and chocolate before, and there's something about ginger that's a little, especially if it's a fresh or a fresh flavor, it's a little cleansing, a little astringent, kind of like combining citrus with chocolate, but different because it brings out that sort of the sweetness that you associate with ginger used in baked goods, whether that's like ginger snaps or gingerbread or something like that. And it was quite nice. The whole meal was a good experience from the ham that I was served to begin with, which was unlike any other ham that I've had. First and foremost, because it was cubed into very small cubes, served with a toothpick so you could spear the cubes and eat them. The fat on the ham, again, was almost buttery, like a soft cheese, and herbed. Also, like often in my experience, some of the soft, mild cheeses sometimes are, to the point where I really didn't recognize it as ham. I thought it was some sort of, I don't know what, some sort of pressed confection of meat and cheese. So I had to ask the waiter, and I'm sure he was no doubt immensely amused by the question that something so commonplace as just ham, even with a treatment that we just don't see of that that food in the US, just it was so far removed from any ham that I've had, of a quality that I can't compare to what I can usually get back home. It was very lovely, and I ate, I'm almost ashamed to admit, every last molecule of that, and enjoyed it because it was so flavorful and the texture was so good. I guess what you could call my recently awakened food quest also continued, and I use that term to liken it to my beer questing, a thought that occurred to me and I shared last night. And I think that the more I consider and contemplate that, the more I think there are parallels, that if I find a bit of courage and intrepidity in terms of trying new things and being open to reevaluate experiences that the first time around maybe I found a little off-putting, has served me well. And in this case, it was I wanted something that wasn't quite as expensive as the beef dish that I got at Deves. Ma Borgogna had several steaks and other beef dishes as well, but they were a little pricier, like the beef shoulder that I had last night, the Rossini with foie gras, even though I don't think they had anything that was dressed in that same way with foie gras. But I did get, instead, to be a little more cost conscious, as I had after I recorded last night, a reminder that I have to be very accountable about my expense reports, working for a not-for-profit that has transparency requirements in terms of how they reimburse and compensate employees, how all the dollars coming in get spent. So I went for something a little more economical, and do yet. Again, you have to forgive my French pronunciations. I'm almost embarrassed to the point where I want to get the Rosetta software package or some other system for learning French. Not so much to get any sort of conversational fluency, but just to inform my pronunciation of place names and dishes and business names and stuff like that, because I do feel a little awkward constantly having to apologize. Regardless, this dish, as it turns out, was a sausage, which is what drew me to it. I thought that it might have some relation to the andouille, which I think is a Spanish sausage. Regardless of its origin, it's a sausage that I tend to really enjoy because it's almost universally, in my experience, very spicy, and I do like the spicy heat. In this instance, that was not the case, and I don't know what the name is meant to evoke. What its etymology is, and it's got me kind of curious. I suppose I could look it up, but it's late, and I'm lazy, and I'm talking to you instead. But the reason I'm talking about it, I'm talking about it in relation to this food quest, and for those who recognize the name of this dish, perhaps despite my abysmal pronunciation, it's a sausage made from chitlins. I don't know how, any other way to put it. I mean, they spell it out as chitterlings, and the waiter asked me what it was, and I almost, if I knew what it was, and I almost gave in to the temptation to ask him to tell me because I couldn't quite remember what sort of offal or organ meat chitlins is, and looking it up before sitting down to talk to you, it's small intestine, usually pork, not always, and it definitely had a flavor I'm unaccustomed to. I won't say it was completely off-putting, but just not something that I encounter in my usual diet. And again, I just tried to approach it with an open mind. I didn't find the texture objectionable at all. I wonder how long it's going to be before I start eating tripe, how long it is before perhaps, again, to invoke one of my, I guess, one of my role models in my world travels here, Mr. Bourdain. I don't know how long it's going to be before I start raving about all kinds of different organ meats. I guess, again, continuing with the discussion I started last night, it's really just having an increasingly open mind to things that I'm not accustomed to. And I think that's the only point that he tries to make when he talks about flavors and textures that the American palate's just not used to, but are much more common elsewhere. And it was a filling dish. It was not the revelation that the beef shoulder with foie gras was, but it was good. It was sturdy food. It was really kind of what I was looking for, almost like a comfort food. So maybe this is a country a rural food here like it is in the US, I don't know, but it was a simple preparation with served with frites, so the first frites I've had in Paris, and they were good. They weren't fantastic. They weren't as good as some of the frites that I had in Belgium. I think that they tend to do them a little bit better there, but they were good. The bread was good. The wine was fantastic overall. Another good meal. It wasn't as again, it wasn't as mind-bogglingly good as Devez, but it was a solid recommendation, and I enjoyed it as I hope you've got a sense of as much for the ambiance and how well the wait staff treated me, and definitely the scenery. Speaking of which, while it was too dark for me to get too much of a view of the square and the buildings that enclose it, or the Victor Hugo mansion, or I guess manse might just mean house. Again, I don't know, and I feel bad that I don't look these things up. I feel like I should understand better. I've gotten some good input though in putting my observations out there, and I've mentioned Jeremy, an old acquaintance from college. I have to give credit to some work colleagues who gave me some input, and to a listener and sometime correspondent, Michael, who was a scholar in Paris, who also offered some wonderful suggestions. And I'll talk a little bit more about the suggestions and how those are playing out in this trip in a moment. But I did walk around some of the square to see a little bit more. There are some lovely galleries that don't have to be open to get a sense of what's going on within them, to see the wonderful pieces that they have on display. And there were just more varieties than I can speak to, from whimsical ones to serious to everything in between. And a couple that will show up in my Flickr stream, and I'll try to capture them appropriately so you understand where they came from and put them in the context of what I'm describing to you. One with these ceramic sculptures of like fat cat samurai. And when you see the pictures, you'll understand. I don't think I need to explain any more than that. I don't want to spoil because I think pictures will do them justice. And the other was a museum of superhero inspired art. And again, I don't want to say too much more than that because I think you need to see the pictures. And when you see them, you'll understand why I took three or four of that one in particular as well as the other. Additionally, there was a moment as I was walking back to the metro, walking down these narrower streets, narrower than I think any of the other neighborhoods that I've been in the arrondissement. I think that's the right word. And again, forgive my pronunciation if I did a hatchet job on it. But walking back towards the Bastille metro station, and again, my eye tends to rise up above the stores. I did pay attention to many of them, as I hinted at earlier. I found Cafe Martini, and some pictures of that will show up in my Flickr stream eventually. In particular, their happy hour board that had Quack and Carmeliat and a couple of other recognizable Belgians. So, if opportunity presents, either on this trip or a future one, to go out for beer specifically, I actually finally know some place where I can get maybe not a good French beer, but definitely good European beer on offer, more than like the Stella and some of the other very pale and not very impressive beers that I found so far. Regardless, in allowing my eyes to drift upward more to the architecture and walking down these less straight streets, a little bit more winding, so kind of losing sight of the crowd, losing sight of some of the distinctly modern things, I just had this flash. And maybe this is the historical reenactors in me speaking, even though it's been years since the wife and I did any of that. But there were always these moments when we did that, when we were in a more authentic encampment or a more authentic event surrounded with more of the trappings, where you really had some small inkling of what it must have been like. And admittedly, that was with a heavy dose of romanticization. And this moment that I had also, I think, was through a very heavily romantic lens. But just as, you know, a lone young gentleman walking through the streets of Paris, through these winding streets by the Bastille, and admiring the architecture and thinking, what other young gentleman, you know, young chevalier in this, you know, perhaps under the rule of some Louis of 14th or 16th, was wandering down these same very streets after a pleasant evening out with enough wine to mellow and warm the body and the spirit, And it just was another peak experience. This is the way, and talking about these sorts of experiences and food experiences, food questing and beer questing, and I guess I could probably start calling it travel questing too, and talking about it with some of my friends, in particular my best friend John. That's really, I think, the right label for it, is it's sort of a peak experience where it's just this perfect conjunction of many factors, and you just have this deep appreciation of being at that time, at that place, and everything that informs it. And that was just a beautiful moment in a trip that otherwise has had a lot of stress. That stress is understandable. I'm not trying to push it off. I am here for business, and business comes first. They're paying my way. They paid my ticket. They're paying my hotel room. They're going to pay as much of my dining out as they're willing to do. I'm trying to, as I said earlier, be a bit more responsible about that and make sure that I'm honoring kind of their expectations around that. And unfortunately, the stress arises because the meetings have just filled up. And I think it's just a natural consequence of the fact that myself and my colleagues working on this project, on the Measurement Lab project, we're all here. And a lot of our collaborators and a lot of the people who are interested in the work and follow the work that we do are here in Europe, whether they're regulators or they're bureaucrats or what have you, or even academic researchers. And being in the same time zone with a lot of them means that many of them today, in particular, we just talked to through video conferencing, through any of the freely available, open to use, anybody can use kind of social video conferencing that's become available on a variety of social networks. We just use that, but that we didn't have to try to arrange a gathering within these narrow windows when you're six time zones apart, so someone's not up too late and the other someone's not up too early. Just makes it a lot more comfortable to have a pleasant chat, to spend more time talking. And of course, being able to meet people in person that happen to be in the city when you're there is absolutely priceless. So again, I'm not trying to say that in any way am I regretful or do I feel resentment towards the reason that I'm here. I hope you get a sense of from what I was talking on early on, just how proud and grateful I am of the work that we're doing and the recognition that it's starting to get and the opportunities that are being presented because of our hard work so far. Even though I've only been working on this project for 6 months, it definitely feels like a year and 6 months or several years and 6 months. But regardless, it means that, I thought, and I think I shared early on in my travelogues for this trip, that I might get out in the afternoon during the daylight hours on Thursday and get out to see something, get out to see an art museum or a history museum or a bit of historical architecture or a cultural spot where I can people watch or something like that. And that's just not going to happen this trip. Tomorrow has been completely booked up. I'm booked up through with meetings through the end of the business day. And I did manage, as I mentioned, to get a reservation at a place that I'm very excited to go to and to share my experiences with you on this burgeoning food quest tomorrow. But really, that's almost kind of a signal moment, a good representation of kind of this trip in a nutshell, that I'm working very hard during the day, unlike the hackathon in Brussels, where I had more time to myself and had new friends to carouse with. This one, I'm working very hard, and I'm trying to take my enjoyment where I can, and that just means that I get out after dark, and I can get out for the late dinner hour, and I'm enjoying it. Again, don't get me wrong. Don't think I'm asking you to cry for me being in one of the most beautiful cities in the world and getting to see even the little bit of it that I am able to see that I recognize many people don't get the opportunity to. Quite the contrary, just getting creative and opportunistic, hacking the circumstances, if you will, to get what I can out of it without disrespecting the reason that I'm actually here. So I will keep all these wonderful recommendations, and they are wonderful. I've gotten a lot of them, and I feel bad that I haven't been able to make use of them. But have confidence that the odds are good that I'll be coming back at least once, if not twice, next year in June, and then perhaps again in December. And there may be more of an opportunity to get out and see some of the sights, some of the stuff that I can't do of an evening after the workday is done. And I may even be able to craft things where I just go ahead and spend an extra day or two just for myself and do that more on my own dime, which would be a little bit more affordable than if I did the whole trip myself. And of course, if I have the reward points for the airfare to bring the wife along, all the better. So until I talk to you tomorrow, that's pretty much all I had on my mind. And I'm kind of surprised. I didn't think I'd have a lot to talk about to see, looking at my timer here, that I'm a little over a half hour. But until I talk to you next time, probably the last update before I catch my flight home on Friday, and I'm at that point in the trip where I'm starting to look forward to it. Don't forget, in the meantime, to hack your world.